So,
Oh, I'm
hello.
saying good. I think Lizzie and I, we're beginning our Turning Towards Life episode, whatever it is, 47,
47.
having agreed how to begin, and then I promptly forgot. So it is my job to say hello to everybody. Welcome to week 47 of Turning Towards Life. We are delighted to be here. For those of you who are watching us live on a different schedule to normal, so thank you for doing what you've done to join us. I was delayed overnight on the return from a very lovely trip with my family, and we are here and very happy to be doing this.
Hello, everybody. I nearly was psychic enough to just jump in, even though we'd agreed that Justin was going to begin. And I feel very happy to be doing this today. I'm having a very domestic, relaxing, not doing much day on this lovely Sunday. And so this reading feels really very simple. And it feels like also linked to where I've been this week as well. So maybe I'll just say a little bit about how come I chose this particular source. There's this little book called Opening Doors Within, which is by a lady called Eileen Caddy, who is one of the founders of the Findhorn Foundation, the Findhorn community in Scotland. And I've been there all of this week with my sister and her husband and their children and lots of other people. And Robert, my brother-in-law, said to me, "This is a great little book." And so then my mum came up and my mum bought it for me, and I have been deciding that I'm going to do my best to read one of the pages every day. So each page in the book has a date associated with it, and this is the reading for August the 26th. And Eileen Caddy wrote down lots of her inner guidance, and these pages are 365 snippets, I guess, of her guidance that she received when she was alive. So it's really interesting for me to have been in a place this week, really intriguing to feel the intention more deeply of what Findhorn is all about. And I thought that bringing this today would be a wonderful thing for us to speak about, and also an acknowledgement of the week that I've just had as well, to have this conversation too. So shall I read, Justin, and then you read, or do you want to do it the other way around?
Why don't you start? And Lizzie, your microphone is just brushing against your hair, so there's quite a lot
Ah,
of
okay,
crackle.
I'm gonna hold it up here.
It's better.
Cool. Okay, so this is by Eileen Caddy from Opening Doors Within, and it's the reading from the 26th of August in her little book. You have a tremendous work to do. It is the silent work of creating more love in the world. It is like the yeast in a lump of dough, which does its work very quietly and without any fuss. And yet without it, the bread would be a solid lump. Therefore, love those souls you are with, love what you are doing, love your environment, and love those souls who are your seeming enemies. There is far more grace in loving the seemingly unlovable than in simply loving those souls who love you. Feel the need for love in every soul and allow yourself to become a channel for love's sake, so the heaviness in the world will be lightened. For love brings an element of lightness where there was heaviness and darkness. Love starts in each individual, so look within your own heart and draw it forth. Give of it freely and with real joy.
It's quite something to hear you read that.
Mm.
I'm going to read it too. You have a tremendous work to do. It is the silent work of creating more love in the world. It is like the yeast in a lump of dough, which does its work very quietly and without any fuss, and yet, without it, the bread would be a solid lump. Therefore, love those souls you are with. Love what you are doing. Love your environment. And love those souls who are your seeming enemies. There is far more grace in loving the seemingly unlovable, than in simply loving those souls who love you. Feel the need for love in every soul and allow yourself to become a channel for love's sake. So will the heaviness in the world be lightened. For love brings an element of lightness where there was heaviness and darkness. Love starts in each individual, so look within your own heart and draw it forth. Give of it freely and with real joy.
So the first thing that strikes me, Justin, is you're reading this to me, and it really makes a difference to have it read to me, is that I feel like this is something I can do. It feels like the step I can take. Like, it feels like a very close-in invitation. And I'm really appreciating that part where it says that love starts in each individual. And so I'm just feeling I feel quite positive about it. Like, I'm noticing, I'm going, oh yeah, I can take one small step. I can start with what's right in front of me and do some silent work of creating more love in the world. I can do that. And then when it relates to the fact that the heaviness might be lightened because of just one loving thing, it feels like there's possibility in it rather than the world is ruined and I have to sit back and watch feeling that I sometimes get. So it feels like there's spaciousness and possibility in reading this between us, and I'm grateful for that.
So interesting hearing you start there, because there was part of me that responds in the way that you're talking about, but actually what I got in contact with pretty quickly as I was reading was how hard this can be.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose both are true simultaneously, which is one of the reasons why this is important, that there's always a place that we can start.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's right. And it's quite a thing to be reminded that the place to start is really close in.
Mm-hmm.
But the phrase in here which hit me quite hard, that had a big impact on me, was there is far more grace in loving the seemingly unlovable than simply loving those souls who love you. And what happened for me as I read that was I thought, oh, yes, I can see that. I can see how attractive it is to love those who love me. So I'm fortunate to have people in my life who love me. So that part's not the hard part for me anyway. The harder part is remembering that the real work is loving that which is not so easy to love, which includes loving myself way more than I'm often feel able to. So often when I know this, I can still very easily get caught in, but that's so difficult because I have such a long list of shortcomings and failures and things that didn't work out. So there's all of that. And the loving what and who I don't yet love. And I get that that's her point, that our work is to find that which we don't yet love and to do our best to love what we can in it. And I also get that she's not saying something simplistic, like she's not saying love prejudice or love oppression or love violence. I get that that's not the point. And it's also still true that this invitation to love what seems unlovable for us is the work. And there was something in the way you said it that I think really brought this out for me, is particularly when we feel despairing. Like one kind of response to despair, I've been reading lots, for example, about what are we really going to do about climate change in the last week, and are we going to be able to do what we need to do?
And a lot of what's being written, there's a lot of rightly frightening things that people are writing about what's happening already and what might happen. Mm-hmm. And I can also see that my easy response to that is to get very afraid and very paralyzed and very despairing, and none of that helps. Mm. Even when things aren't working out, to do what Eileen Caddy is asking us to do, it still seems to me, I can see from in here and in this conversation with you, is still the thing that's called for from us. Because what else, how else are we going to, first of all, how else are we going to live in a way that has any chance of being a life worth living if we're not doing this? And second of all, what chance have we got of helping one another if we're not doing this as well? So it seems to me it's very practical as well as very deep.
Yeah, I also feel like that. And actually, Justin, just towards the piece of what you were saying, that the beginning of what you're saying, she says, simply loving those souls who love you. I don't find that very simple.
I thought you might say that. It's the part that I find easy, but I thought as I said it, oh yeah, Lizzie might say something different about it.
Yeah. Well, because I think it's sometimes the hardest people to love are the ones closest to you. Mm. That is true in my life, that in a way it's the easiest thing and in the way it's the hardest thing. And, you know, I think anyone who's around children and has a role in parenting them knows that sometimes it's not easy to make the right decision or to know what loving your children is. Sometimes is a really hard thing. It's not always obvious. And we all argue with each other, we fall out with our families, you know, all of that stuff. It feels like when I read that line, I thought, oh, that's not simple. And it's also not simple to love my enemies. It doesn't feel simple to me. And I also know that there is a place in me that gets the grace in loving what's unlovable. Like I really feel the grace in it. When I can do it, which is not all the time by any means, but if I'm supporting myself in intentionally loving that which is unlovable, I can feel the grace in that for sure. And so I feel very supported by that invitation. And I wish that the heaviness was lightened. And so I can find a way to into that. And I also really don't feel like it's simple. And of course, on one level, probably, and it might be easy, but I think the only way that we can do these conversations is to be straightforward about what life is like for us and be genuinely where we are at. And I feel like also the last thing I ever want to do is kind of bypass the grit. And I also know that I have to hold the more spiritual dimension really well so that I don't let my grit become the only thing I'm in contact with.
Yeah.
So I think for me, this is like this invitation to hold the breadth of a human experience that allows the heaviness and the darkness and the difficulty to be here. And all the way along the spectrum to also allow this bigger sense of this thing that I think has been called love, which is bringing something in addition to my reactions and looking at my reactions and my responses to things and really asking what love is here, what might love look like, and that may be the same as my response and it may be different to my response. And to be in that conversation always feels like what this brings me into contact with in reading it.
I really appreciate your straightforwardness with it. And you have just raised a question for me that I'm going to echo back, and I don't in a way really yet know how to respond to it, which is, what does it mean to love in the first place? Like it seems so obvious on a first reading, but as I'm grappling with it, you know, is it to welcome? Because surely it's partly that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it can be to take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it can be to get out of the way. And so, I mean, it could be so many things. And I'm now remembering one partial response to this, which is actually from my own preparing for what I was going to say at my own wedding.
Mm.
Having come across the work of Eric Fromm, who was a psychotherapist, who says love isn't a feeling, it's a verb.
Mm.
So it's not how you feel about something really at all. It's a way of being, it's a way of acting in relationship to just about anything.
Mm.
Of course, it's a deep kind of caretaking, and that's why. So I'm with you. I, as you were talking, I was thinking about the many different ways in which I find it difficult to know myself as loved by those who love me, and to love those who love me in some of the ways that you were talking about already. And I was also thinking, but it's easiest for me to love in those moments when I feel myself as loved, like when I know the love of another and I can really feel it, it's easier for me to love back. And my troubles get in to when people, for example, people who love me, but I don't get that they love me, or they don't love me in the way that I'm particularly, like the narrow space that I'm particularly wanting them to love me in right now. That's harder for me. And I've started to wonder, as we've been talking, to link back to something we were talking about last week when we were bringing in what happens when we know ourselves as in always in relationship to another that is bigger than us, that sometimes the way I get to make this first step that she talks about, where she says, Eileen Caddy says, it starts in each individual. And I think that's true. And I also know that it most starts for me when I catch a glimpse of being held in something much, much bigger that is itself loving, my capacity to do this. Like, it's not all down to me on my own to be the one who's the originator of love. It always comes from being in relationship, sometimes with another and sometimes with a who knows what this is that we're all in the middle of all the time.
Yeah, I find the same thing. And it's like, for me, it brings the feeling of not knowing where things begin and where things get passed on and what direction anything's going in, because I might be the person that loves you, that gives you the capacity in one moment to love, and vice versa. And that can happen in all kinds of directions and ways. And as you're talking, it makes me reflect on, I'm not sure which way round it really is. And the thing we were talking about last week about being in relationship to the something bigger that we can receive from and know is always who we are. It feels like that's one something and you're another something, and the sky is another something, and everyone in the constellation, wherever we are, has the potential in our lives to be the beginning of a small love move. And actually, that's one of the principles in FinTorn, is love in action, and to be participating in what you're doing with love. And so today I was cleaning our fridge and I did some crocheting and tried to make a tea cozy, which frankly looks terrible right now. But I was really wondering about this reading and feeling what it would be like to bring the lightness to what I was doing, whatever that thing was. And that's one of the guiding lights, I think, in FinTorn, when they're attending the gardens or making food or painting the shed or whatever, they chopping wood, whatever they might be doing, or organizing the whole community. And I'm feeling the invitation of that really recently, of what it is to serve myself through serving with love. Actually, whether there's anybody else that I'm serving or I'm just serving. And this feeling of loving what I'm doing. Like if I could just take one line from this and it was love what you were doing, that feels like an endless inquiry. What is it to love what I'm doing? And to love as I do, and to have doing be loving, and let them be intermingled with one another. And then what might that have me be like with other people if I was practicing in the moments of non-human relating anyway, doing in a loving way? What does that make in me, as me? And then does that give me the capacity to draw this love forth from my own being? So that's the question that I'm in, and I don't know whether that's true or not, but it feels like a real invitation that I've received from Findhorn and other places to see how I can be present in what I'm doing, that I might be yeasting and finding pockets of being presence that might make the dough rise around me, in me, in others, maybe.
I'm thinking that to love what we're doing, to love what I'm doing, means first of all to include what I'm actually feeling about it, rather than to try to have to force myself to feel a particular way. So this point, Eric Fromm's point, that love is a verb, it sounds like this is part of the Findhorn whole orientation to this. So I might be feeling bored. So can I, two things, can I come to that being bored by what I'm doing in a way that is loving? And then the other side that I'm also wanting to bring in, which is, I think this is the part that she doesn't say that I keep on wanting to come back to keep on adding in. So can I let myself be loved by the thing that I'm doing too? So if I'm washing the dishes and there's a stack of, what I was thinking was not just washing the dishes from, you know, the five of us who live in my house, but washing the dishes for 100 people. So it's going to take me a really, really long time, and the pile of dishes never really gets smaller, and they keep going. Can I let myself, the extent to which I can allow myself to be loved by that, which sounds like a really weird thing to say, but I think it's not actually at all a really weird thing to say. Here I am, and I've got them in my hands, and there's soapy water, and there's the rhythm of it. Allowing myself to know myself being in a reciprocally loving relationship here is how we begin.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I think this can sound like a sort of an act of force, like an act of forcing things to be a particular way, which I'm simply loving, she says in the middle of it. So that's what I would go. I would go look within your own heart and draw it forth, yes, and look in who and what is around you and draw it forth too, or allow yourself to be touched by or infused by what you're in the middle of.
I love that, Justin. It feels so right to be receiving from the thing. And I think to find this language, you know, I think intentionality can be enriched all the time with our intentionality around love, an intention to include how this dish is loving me, how my actions are loving me, and to become conscious of that flow feels such a widening invitation into being present to what we're doing. And I also think that love and presence bring forth the things that are unlike that. So to be present and to have an intention to love what we're doing and to be loved by what we're doing might also bring much to the surface to be seen about what our distortions might be, or what our mistaken identities might be, or whatever. And be loved by whatever we're doing as well as put our own individual love into something. It also follows in my mind that what comes up, like, so in my crochet just now, like, I literally just had this experience, which is I am bringing my intention to love and to be doing something simple and seeing what it might be to love what I'm doing. And what arises for me is a huge, big, fat frustration, which is that I'm terrible at crochet, which is that my body feels really, really tense. And in a way, all my good intentions could be completely clouded by that. But I also find that if I do something with intent and with love, I have the background understanding for myself that what gets brought up is possibly something that needs to be brought up into that space to be held and to be acknowledged and to be observed and worked with as well. So in a way, that's another way it's not simplistic for me. It's like I have to be really straight with myself about what arises. You know, I get bored, I get frustrated, I get resentful actually sometimes. So resentment can come, lots of different emotions and feelings and physical sensations. And yet the thing that feels most important is the intent, because if the intent is there to have this be a practice that I can see myself in and be supported by, all that's really happening is a deepening of my understanding of myself and an encountering of a contactfulness between maybe love and presence and the parts of me that I want to welcome forth and to work with and acknowledge. Because no doubt, whatever I'm practicing in and whatever it's showing me is coming up will be there in the rest of my life somewhere too.
Yeah.
For sure, with the work that I'm doing, the people that I'm with, the things I find frustrating about life, it could probably all be there right in my crochet if I was looking. And I am, and I see it all, and the patterns belong in my crochet just as they belong in whatever else I might do in my life. Mm-hmm. But my crochet is an intentful experience of seeking that out wantingly, in a way that I'm intending to see myself rather than being asleep and wandering around and being annoyed with everyone or something. It's, yes, like, oh, I can see my frustration here because I'm asking for it to be seen and I want to see it and I want to work with it rather than, and I think this is the nature of practice, frankly. I don't think practice is made of like fairy dust or something and everything's great when I do my practice. I think practice is like the most challenging thing that I could do with myself is to practice. Because I get to see myself. I get to see what it's like when I stop, when I don't do all my compensatory moves. I get to see underlying frustration. I get to see tensions in my body that I didn't even know were there when I was doing something different. So it feels like the intentionality and the holding space that I make by intending to see more clearly and to be more real about what's going on for me. That's the supportive intentionality that feels like a practice is made of, and where I get to see, I get to encounter myself, to be contactful with those things that I might normally reject or be in denial about.
So we circle round. I think you've circled around beautifully to again, this isn't about feeling a particular way. It's an what you're saying about intention, which seems to me is one of the unique gifts of being a human being, is that we intend. We can orient ourselves purposefully with an attitude of care towards and in a way taking responsibility for something. And like you say, it doesn't always feel wonderful. It could be filled with frustration. It could be filled with anything. So can we continue to orient with care and intention towards it, and that, and of course towards others, and of course towards anything we experience? And I think this is really important, because maybe one of the reasons why love is so easily dismissed in so many parts of our culture is because the interpretation of love that's being brought there is this very sort of sugary, simplistic, something like everything will be roses and sunshine, and everybody will be feeling light and airy all the time. Rather than this is a way of being in our lives, not fleeing from our lives and not fleeing from one another. And of course, as she says, love brings an element of lightness where there was heaviness and darkness. Yes, that is exactly the move, because when we stop trying to fight things and to get out of them and to dissociate from them and to damp them down, I think the thing that I'm realizing in myself is that when I pay attention to what the quality of my own experience, it's this that Eileen Caddy is talking about, that we're talking about, that invites me into the possibility of feeling vibrant and open and creative and spacious and caring and attentive, when my ordinary non-loving moves, which are dissociate, freeze, run away, get angry, get my abandonment in first, whatever it is that I'm going to do, avoid, never has that possibility. So it's not like love is the, it's not like loving is, I think you talked about magic earlier, it's not like loving is a thing that will magically resolve everything. And yet at the same time, it's the path that brings us in to contact with our own aliveness and with other people's aliveness and with the aliveness of the world. And maybe if we were to do that, we'd also find a way of addressing a lot of the difficulties we're in more skillfully, because it would bring us into exactly in the way that you're saying with your crochet. I think crochet is such a fabulous example of any kind of difficult thing that we might do. It brings us right up close. I know what it is. This is intimacy.
Yeah.
So it's an invitation to intimacy with ourselves, with the conditions of our lives, with what's right in front of us and with who's around us, even if they are seemingly an enemy.
Yeah. That's a really beautiful thing you said, Justin, about intimacy. Feels so true that inside of that intimacy arises everything that wants to be seen. And it takes great strength to stay with that. Because it's really easy to just put the bloody crochet down, walk away. Because it's, you know, my crochet right now, I'm trying to make a tea cozy. And I actually texted my mum earlier and said, "Mum, maybe she's a really good crocheter. Did you make me a tea cozy?" And I thought, "Well, Mum's going to make me one, but I'll see if I could do one at the same time." And it's this wonky line, and it really does bring so much up. And actually, as I sit here now with you, I can feel that I'm now kind of getting into a more settled state. We're doing that. Like, this is a kind of intimacy that is like flowing for me. But crochet doesn't flow for me. As I'm sure you will imagine, it's like, it's really tricky for me to stay with it. And so I know it's good for me. Like, I know it has something in it and that I can bring my intention to it. But those things that we find hard, it feels such a lovely invitation, like to become infinite, intimate with the things we find difficult. What if that can show us the gifts that are to be received from life more clearly. And of course, I love to do the things that are easy for me, but it also really helps to do the things that are hard for me so that I can see where my edges are, where my patterns lie, who I am in this moment. And so it feels really important to do the things that are hard for me as well as the things that are easy for me.
Yes. And that's what practice is.
And yeah.
That's why living a life of practice where we do the practice for the sake of, for its own sake, but I'm actually going to rephrase it, for the sake of intimacy with life.
Yeah.
But we keep on with the practice, not because it's always delightful or because I always want to do it, but because it's there and it's an invitation into an intimate relationship with whatever it is that we're practicing, with others, with my own body, with the world around me, with patience, with frustration. Mm-hmm. And maybe the most important work we can do, in a way, right in the heart of what you're saying, is to cultivate intimacy with that which we would rather avoid completely.
Mm-hmm.
That's our work, because that's how we become the kind of presence in the world that can face into life and take care of life and bring joy and lightness and delight, as well as courage and persistence and whatever other virtues we might care to name. So we are definitely at the time that we should stop, and because we've run out of time, partly because it being 20 to 6 on a Sunday
evening,
my house is now heaving with young adults and almost adults, all probably about to burst in here and get on with their thing. So I think might be time for us to stop for this week.
Mm. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everybody, for being flexible with us on timing as well. Yes. We're doing by hook or by crook, turning towards life.
Yes, indeed. And all being well, we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.